Blog Talk Radio.
Please, allow me to show you something.
Somebody give me. Yeah. Somebody give me. Somebody tell me the answer. Me and you isn't the answer. Me and you isn't. Maybe I'm telling myself that, but there ain't nothing that'll change that. What good would it be if I knew how you felt about me? Yeah. It could've been right, but I was wrong. Only think about you when you're alone. Part of me that cares is gone, and I know that I can't get caught up. We could've been, pretend every now and again. We don't dream about, don't think about what we could have been. No, I'm holding it in, cause I know in the end, you dream about, I think about what we could have been. We could have been. We could have been. Remember? Remember the night in Miami? First time you put your arms around me. I'm up reminiscing. Thinking about you isn't helping. Thinking about you doesn't tell me. But what good it would do if I decide to face the truth? It could have been right, but I'm wrong. I only think about you when you're wrong. You only hit me up when you're not home. And that's why I can't get caught up. We could've been, and we try to pretend. Every now and again, we don't dream about, don't think about what we could've been. Oh, yeah. I'm holding it in, cause I know in the end, you dream about, I think about what we could've been. We could've been. We could've. We could've been.
Gotta hide it, what's the point of trying? I ain't just a friend, no, what's the point of lying? Trying to sell a story, ain't nobody buying. Look me in my eyes, don't that feel nice? Why should it end? Baby, I could've been. I could've been him or your friend. Just say where to win, where to make a trip. Baby, make a wish, be the one I wish. Should've been a, should've, could've, would have been.
Hey.
up her pain, and now we're back doing the same old thing isn't on our side. Are you down to ride with me? We don't know what's left. Don't want no regret. So are you down to ride one last time? I sit and think unconsciously about her.
You are my starship. evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Epiphany Radio Universe of For Real Entertainment Network as it presents War Council. War Council is a egalitarian conscious community panel discussion that dialogues around current events and community issues. And tonight's topic, we are talking about power dynamic in relationships. Who has power and control in relationships, men or women? This is part one. We're discussing this thing and having it all out and seeing what's happening. We're going to get it done. So being that I'm here, I am terribly sick, but I am Iron Man, and I need to stop being Iron Man, but I couldn't figure out all the stuff I need to do, so I decided to come on. And I'm probably going to get yelled at, but hey, this is what happens. All right, so I'm going to open up the lines for my fellow War Council people that are coming through. We're going to rock out. We're going to go to my favorite Philly John best friend, Danielle Cheney. Hey, Danielle.
Hey, hey, Harvey. Good evening, beautiful
people. What's happening? What's happening? All right, hold on. Let me turn that up. All right. I'm going to go to the state of Virginia where somebody said they way past drinking. Lisa Lip.
Hey, baby.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm good.
Then I'm going to go over to my other best friend in the entire universe, Daoud.
Hey, yo. Yes, I am.
See, I know bands here, but you said you think. We actually need Zan for the season. Zan, are you there? Oh, matter of fact, that would be great if I did that. Hey, Zan, are you there?
What's up, bro?
What's going on?
What's good, man?
So you're going to hear me call back. I see a couple other people here. But, you know, let's get started. Let me get to the thing I like to use so much. You know what? What I think I'm going to do? I think I am going to utilize Whale. You know? Nice little background noise for us to talk. Can y'all hear me clearly?
Yeah.
No, I got a big frog in my throat.
Can hear you.
Can hear you. All right.
We can hear you.
All right. So, what we got here tonight is we're going to talk about the struggle for power in romantic relationships between men and women, who has upper hand. I've taken the time to do a little bit of preparation for that, you know. So I got this thing from Relish. Which talks about relationship power dynamics. And it says, feel like there's a battle for power in your relationship? Relish is a relationship coaching app that provides the benefits of traditional therapy all from your phone. All right, that's what the thing are happening. But they're saying the struggle for power is, one, demand withdrawal dynamic. This type of power dynamic describes one partner who wants to address change, discussion, and issues in relationships, known as the demander, and the other is more withdrawn, typically wanting to avoid problems. Research has shown that a demand withdrawal dynamic is a significant predictor of divorce and marital dissatisfaction, as well as spousal depression. The same study also found that women tend to be the demanders, while men are often the withdrawn partners. Right? Two, the distancer-pursuer dynamic. In this dynamic, the pursuer tries to reach a certain level of intimacy in a relationship, while the distancer considers the intimacy smothered. Typically, the pursuer pushes so much that the distancer eventually becomes resistant and defiant, while the man withdrawal dynamic is about who has more power. The distance pursuer dynamic is more of a struggle over the level of intimacy and connection. Right, and the last one is part three, the fear-shame dynamic. This power dynamic is considered more unconscious than the others. Ultimately, the fear and insecurity of one partner bring out the shame and avoidance of the other, and vice versa. A common example used by psychologists is what happens in the car. The passenger gets started at something and the driver gets angry, thinking to assault on their driving ability. They might make a snarky comment or drive more erratically to make a passenger more afraid. Each partner believes that the other one is overreacting, insensitive, or immature. this is the most commonly seen as heterosexual relationships. This dynamic is not intentional, it's instinctual. There are different factors that influence the feeling of fear and shame, including hormone levels. Women tend to be more fearful thanks to increased estrogen levels, while males tend to be more aggressive and physically powerful. When males cannot protect females from certain dangers, it can lead to them having feelings of shame. When a woman experiences anxiety or fear, it can cause immediate shame reaction in the man who feels like her emotions are a direct attack on his ability to protect her. He may respond by being aggressive, defensive, or shutting down, which causes more fear in the woman. A vicious cycle. Usually, it's not a woman's intent to belittle her partner or make them feel inadequate. This dynamic, although unintentional, can lead to a lot of issues in a romantic relationship, which also increases the risk of divorce. All right, so I'm throwing all this stuff out here right now, right, because we're talking about the different things in power dynamics. And there's multiple power dynamics, but we're going to start with those or anything else. So my basic question is, you know, given what we've been talking about, who has the upper hand?
No one.
Right.
You can't win in these situations under these circumstances. Jesus, so many things behind this, because I think the main reason why these issues and these situations go awry is because we react to the reaction of whatever it is that the other person did, and how they what their intentions were behind it. I can only speak from being in toxic relationships. I haven't been in a positive relationship. The power dynamic was, it wasn't even a struggle, because I pretty much gave up my control over everything. But it was like okay, you spoke on someone driving extremely fast to bring about a certain reaction, and the other party is looking at them as overreacting. My husband used to do that bullshit, me and the kids, to get a reaction out of me, to get me to be more submissive, even though I was already submissive. I agreed with everything. I didn't put up a fuss. I didn't argue about anything. I just was like, yeah, you're right. But when he felt inadequate, which he felt a lot, he would do the extra shit. So he had the power. Now, I've seen relationships. I know people that have been in a relationship where there's a complete power struggle between both of them. But it's a losing battle. There is no winner in this. And someone always winds up being more damaged than the other. That's it.
Mm. Okay. All right. Anyone want to add to that? Hello. Anyone want to add to that?
Now, I fully agree with what Danielle has said, because when you're in a situation where there is someone who controls the relationship, then that makes for a toxic situation. But there has to be an even yoke. Otherwise, there's a problem.
I mean, if you see someone who has an idea that they want to control the relationship, for example, what it says here is, when your partner physically intimidates you, whether physical violence, whether threatened or acted upon, is never okay in a relationship. And if you're afraid of your partner's words or reactions, it signals an incredibly healthy power dynamic. Your partner is turning physical force to control tactics and ensure their own needs are met. In this case, you should find a way to safely end the relationship. And I think that when somebody is trying to do something like that, in that particular thing, they're basically trying to make sure that you have a healthy amount of fear so that you don't want to go anywhere, or you're afraid of what might happen to you if you choose to do it. Because, you know, that whole thing is in that whole thing is like, how can I scare you into being or not going anywhere, or not doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me leverage you. You know, for me personally, like what my ex-wife used to do, she used to just take my kids and disappear for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't say anything. She wouldn't say where she went, and she like literally like. Literally, she would make these choices and these decisions to leverage me into doing things. And truth be told, I'm not even upfront. That's how I ended up getting married, because it was an act of leverage. It wasn't an act of love. It was like, if you're not going to do this, then I'm going to do this to you. You know, and so it wasn't a physical intimidation. It was more of emotional manipulation to get things done,
mm-hmm.
make things happen. But if a person is physically towards you, you know, like a lot of times when people know that you love your kids and they know that you'll do anything for them, they use that love against you in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what was that, the Green Mile, like, you know, when he was crying, he said he used that love against him. You know, because
mm-hmm.
some people will use that. How can I make you suffer because of you have so much love for this person in particular, and so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make you do this so I can have the satisfaction for this occurring. But that was what you did.
I just saw a flashbang.
That was what you there?
Yeah, I'm here. So. I just came back from a 2-day DV training, and in the training they talked about this dynamic called power and control, which is very kind of big when it comes to the DV world, because, you know, usually the power control dynamic is discussed as a man on female situation, and rightfully so, because for years, men who had money and means would use power to control women and thereby control the relationship. So they would use it to control through money. And I told a story in my DV class just today about this, where I have a person that's very close to me that I knew as a woman, and she knew that when bill time would come around, that her intimate partner would purposely hold back money. So what she knew was, is she knew that she had to, give that person sexual favor just so they could give them the bills to survive in their own home. That is an excellent example, I think, of power and control, because, you know, goddamn, like, just be, you know, a person has to give you intimacy just to pay the bills that both of y'all going to benefit from. Stuff like that goes on all the time. Now, you know, I think that it happens with women also, but for the most part, we are used to discussing it with men on women. But the financial playing field is leveling slowly but surely. So as the financial playing field levels, what you're starting to see is that there are women that engage in this too financially. But for the most part, I think over the years, the power control game on the women's side has more so been emotionally and sexually, where sex is used as power. If you've ever been in what they call a sexual sexless marriage, then you know that that's a power control game simply for one reason. You're expected to be monogamous as a man when you're in a relationship, and when a woman purposely withholds sex or gives you the most worst, boring sex that there possibly can be, that's part of the power control game. If you don't do what I say, you're not going to have sex. So I think that this particular discussion, I think, is going to be really good for all of us, because as we peel back the layers, we're going to see that power control, it's a big thing in the domestic violence world, and I'm glad that we decided to talk about it.
All right, so I want to come back to, hold on, I'm just admitting Edwina in. Hey Edwina, what's going on?
Good evening, everybody. Hey guys.
Hey, what's up, Tim?
Doing great, ready for this conversation. It should be a good one.
So, for example, one of the other things that I wanted to bring up, if you find yourself apologizing all the time, even when you don't need to, there's a term known as gaslighting. where one partner enacting an alpha level control by making a partner question their own actions, even their own reality. Every argument or disagreement is your fault, never theirs, right? When it's important to say that you're sorry in a relationship, it's also important to not form a trap of saying it's just to appease your partner. This is a telltale sign that there's a negative imbalance of power in your relationship. So here's the question. Have you been gaslit in a relationship before?
Absolutely.
It's fixing because you don't know at the time when it's being done to you that that's what's being done to you. You kind of look for and long for that part of the relationship where they show you excess amounts of attention and compliment you constantly, things that they should normally be wanting to do to you and say to you, and they withhold that. And then when they want something from you, whether it's to control you in some way or form or get something from you, they start this love bombing shit. And they will, when they finally get you in the position that they want you in, or they hear what they want to hear, or they get what they want to get, you react however they want you to react, that's when they go back to the bullshit. And they make it seem like, well, you know, you didn't have to listen to what I was saying, or just some kind of manipulation to turn it around on you. They use your words against you, you know, your actions against you, any kind of way. And they try to make you seem like you are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. When you know damn well you got good damn sense. But they have manipulated you so much that you literally question yourself, well, damn, should I have said that? Should I have responded to that? Should I have accepted that? Maybe I should have thought, you know, he did do this before a long time ago, but it was a long time ago. How you questioning yourself in a crazy way?
So, right. Yeah, they make I've you doubt your own mind.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know for myself, when I was in that situation, and he had made me doubt myself, but I had to go to a business meeting where I was presenting information, and I realized in the middle of my presentation, I'm the only woman in this room, and these men are standing up and applauding what I have to say, and I'm thinking to myself, I know what the hell I'm doing. This nigga is crazy, trying to make me feel like I don't know what I'm doing. So when I left that meeting, I had a whole new attitude. I was like, we are not doing this. But it took me having to be in a different situation to recognize what he was doing and making me feel like I was small and unintelligent and not knowing what I was doing, when for real it was just your own insecurities that made you want to make me feel small, so it made you feel better. So in the next morning, and he woke up trying to say he needed me after you done told me you don't want me and that you only here because you feel sorry for me, and then the next morning you waking up talking about I need you. No thanks, I don't want any. You keep all that to yourself because I didn't fulfill what you needed, so you go on and find something that fulfills what you needed, because I can't do this.
Yeah, he did it because someone else acknowledged the fact that you actually had a head on your shoulder.
They validated what I already knew.
Right, but he didn't want anyone else to get a hold of that, you know, and make you realize, you know what, I ain't got to take this shit from this motherfucker. I'm a good person, you know. There's no reason for me to believe this. I was taking up classes at Temple. And he insisted on telling me that I had a very small mind, that I wouldn't be able to accomplish anything I set out to do for whatever reason. He just say all kinds of mean, evil, hateful, nasty shit. Because they don't want you to recognize your independence.
Right, because in that vacuum, they have the better of you. Within that vacuum, but once you step outside of that vacuum and you realize, I'm not crazy, I know what I'm talking about, then they lose their power because now you understand that you are who you thought you were all along.
All right.
All right, Adjuini, did you want to say something?
Do I want to? What was the question?
Have you ever been gaslit before?
Gaslit. I can say it's hard to have this conversation and to still be in the situation that I've went through with this person. Like, he accused me of cheating on him with my cousin while he was cheating on me with someone else. And he, when I told him that I wasn't, he got in the car with me and turned my car into oncoming traffic, caused me to crash, and got out of the car. And when the police got there and I had to tell them what happened, he said that I'm not his ride or die because I would have never told if I really cared about him. He bought him cheating on me because a female called me and told me about how he used to laugh at me behind my back. And when I told him that I knew, he told me it was because I let myself go. I've had him, but then I think it's hard to speak of situations like this and say that it's completely gaslighted because I have to question what is going on with me that for more than 20 years I've allowed situations like this to happen. Like, there was one night he was out with someone else and I told him, I said, how would you feel if I was here with another man and he drove from where he was and came and choked me? And then he said it was my fault because I should have never provoked him. And now he's at a point where he wants to change, or he says he wants to change, because I'm no longer responding to or feeling like I'm want to be in the situation. And now we want to act like everything that happened never happened and I should just let it be water under the bridge. But it builds a lot of resentment and a lot of bitterness that I'm still trying to work through, because it makes me wonder, question myself, like, what was wrong with me that I would allow something like this to take place in my life? You know what I mean?
Right. They like to create a doubt in your own mind about who you know that you are and who the person that you know yourself to be. They want you to question your own mind. And that's crazy. But you know yourself, who you are as a woman and who you are as a person. So whatever it is that he's trying to create in your mind, don't allow his weakness to make you weak, because you know your own strength.
I feel like I'm coming to an acknowledgement of that now, that I'm finding my own voice outside of this relationship. But I met this person and I've been with him since I was 20 years old, so it's like,
he knows you well enough to know how to push your button.
All of those weak points, like growing up without a family and how important family is to me. And you definitely use that against me on a day-to-day basis to make me so guilty about not wanting to be in this marriage
I'm going to tell you something. You don't owe him shit.
Right.
Keep that in mind. You don't owe him anything, okay?
Yeah.
Whatever it is that you feel as though you owe to him, you paid your debt, okay, long time ago. Keep that in mind, okay?
Definitely. It was a poem that I wrote. It's called Bitter Bitch Therapy. And I think that when I wrote that poem, it was me changing my mind from a person that was becoming bitter and resentful to the things that I was allowing to happen to me, to go into feeling like I'm feeding the beast my lack of self-assurance, my lack of confidence, and my, you know, those things that are wrong with myself that I need to be working on and healing. And if I stop feeding it, then it no longer has power. That's what I've learned from it all.
It's true.
Yeah.
Mm. What you nurture will grow.
Right.
You know, the funny thing is when you're listening to, like, the funny thing is everybody has a moment where they've been with somebody who's narcissistic and they're trying to figure out exactly, you know, how did I get to this point? You know, how did I get to the point where this was occurring or that was occurring and everything else? And we all do different things. Like, I believe I was talking in Angel's Room, we were talking about love bombing. And I was like, the love bombing I experienced was with her using sex to make me, like, just like Daoud said, using sex to make me pliable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be this person. Mm-hmm. Let me become this person for you for this meantime in order to get you to soften up so I can further go and manipulate certain things. And so literally, like, you know, to the point where someone's trying to tell you that you can't come get your children because some goddamn teen has got to have a conversation with them. And I was like, listen, I was like, I don't give two shits about this person. I was like, he's not their father, anything else. But I realized, how did I get to this point where I'm literally bargaining with someone over my children, over someone that you're just screwing, with anything else is going on. But, you know, you allow those things to go on because you're being constantly pushed upon. You know, and the other thing that I also heard during the course of this conversation is, like, you know, he caused you to crash by turning, like, what, so to me, right, to me, this is what I think, right, when somebody's a narcissist, right, a malignant narcissist at that, they will do anything that they can to cause that fear. Like, we talked about causing fear, driving real fast, doing all this other stuff, doing these different things, taking your phone, doing all this other shit to you to try to cause some type of, fear or something like that. So for him to turn into traffic with you in the car, right, he literally was trying to figure out a way to scare you where you are so that you wouldn't have to do anything. And it's not uncommon. This is the second time I've heard something like this. But actually, if I actually look back, I remember one of my friends who's like a little brother to me, the mother of his children literally took his car and crashed it, right? And then said, you're gonna listen to me when I talk. And he's like,
wow.
But you crashed the car. He's like, you crashed the car, and now we can't get our kids to where we need to get our kids to. Like, she completely was so busy trying to get revenge on him that she didn't understand that the car was germane to everything that they needed to do. And then when people do stuff like that, they think, like, if they know that something is essential to you, they know that's essential to you, they're going to try to figure out a way to take that away from you and do something for it. How can I take this away from you? How can I make you suffer in the best way possible by pushing certain things to go on? Like, how can I, you know, let me, you know what? I don't want you going anywhere, so I'm going to mess your car up. And then I know I got money to fix it, but I'm not going to fix your shit.
Right.
And then when the police come and they're telling what happened, right, literally they're making it seem like it's your fault for something that they did, when literally all they tried to do was to make sure that they took something away from you so that you'd be pigeonholed into wherever they wanted you to pigeonhole because they needed to control you.
Right.
And that's malignant narcissism 101. Like, you know,
yes.
That's what it, how can I take this away from you? You know, if I take your car away, you can't just get up and drive away from me. If I mess your car up, you know, and then I'm going to make you do whatever you need to do to jump through these hoops in order for me to fix your car, even though I'm responsible for it. But I'm going to blame you for the shit I did because this, you know. And anybody who decides to come put their hands on you at that point, like, that's an ass waiting to happen. Just straight up, like, oh, it's your fault that I came and did this. No, you think that I'm property. You think that I'm an inanimate object that you own. You think that these things, and it gets to that point where it heals. And you get to the, like, literally, I remember I was having some mental health issues. I ain't going to sit here and lie to you, right? And I had to call my father because I was over it. Like, I was so over it. And my father was like, listen, he's like, you're in the worst situation possible. And this woman is screaming in your face. She doesn't care about how you feel. She wants you to go on and do this. Mm-hmm. And literally, I had to think about that. Now, years, you know, that was like 2006, right? You know, when I think about the situation, I think of how much help and stuff I've gone through. I think about the dynamic of the relationship that we had. Somebody mm-hmm. popped or something. I think about the relationship we had, and I realized.
Yeah, that should sound crazy.
It was so much manipulation, like literally, how can I put so much pressure on you to make you do this? Like, I remember I had a Acura Legend,
right?
And I sold it, and she was like, oh, well, with this Acura Legend, you know, the funny thing is, she messed it up because I said, listen, don't drive it over a certain amount of speed, don't do this, or, you know, she's like, I want to drive your car, right? So when she brought the car back, my car, like, it had a crack in the engine head. So I was like, you can't drive it really fast. I was like, don't go over 75 in the car. Right. I was like, don't go over 75 in the car. I told her that. Right. The first thing my daughter said is that, oh, Dad, she was doing like 100, blah, blah, blah. And then she heard the car crack. And I was just like, why would you do that? Why would you, like, after I told you to not do it, why would you do it? And then act like you didn't do it. And then you sitting here talking about, I don't know what happened to your car, blah, 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 there's something wrong with it. And then on top of it, when I sold it, right, the money from it, like, she was complaining about the money. Like, she didn't really want me to have that money in my hand, right? And so she was making up all kinds of things. She was like, oh, blah, 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 and this got to be done, and this got to be done, and this got to be done, and you need to give me all the money because of this, and blah, 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 and plus you owe me, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, and I noticed that certain people who are narcissistic will always tell you what you owe them. They will always tell you owe them something. They will, you owe me.
Yep.
You owe me this. You know, I did this all, after all this stuff I done did.
You wouldn't be nothing without me.
Right.
Oh yeah, my husband said that.
When they haven't really done anything.
Exactly.
My husband told me he made me.
And it's like, and it's crazy because, like, if they can get it off you. I remember another time was like, so whenever I would go on a trip, like if I was gonna go do, like, poetry someplace else or anything else. So I need all my money when I'm traveling because you never know what you might go through, what you might experience.
Exactly.
And I remember she was like mad at me, and I was like, listen. I was like, I'm going to make more money when I get there. I'll just give you money when I get back. Yo, she took all my money and threw it in my face.
Mm.
Wow.
And the funny thing is, like, I knew that she was so happy when she did that because she felt like I wasn't going to do anything. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I know, Dawu was like, what? Dawu was like, what?
Yeah, anything that makes you feel like you lose control, you need to check yourself. Anything that makes you feel like you're losing control of your own mind, then you need to check that. Because that's gaslighting in its highest form. When it starts to make you feel like you're losing your mind or you don't know what you're doing, you need to check what situation is happening around you.
I'd like to say, before we continue that, one of the things I learned about this whole power and control thing is that as much as we may be repulsed by these are behaviors that we all are capable of having ourselves. And we always, as we talk about this and we learn about it, we got to be mindful that we can do this to somebody else. And I know that is not, sometimes we think that's not possible. But I think that I'd like to think that I've never used my power against somebody else, but you just never know, because you know there is overt forms of partner intimate abuse, and then there's like covert or like you know the less known, and some of these things that we're talking about, we may have done them to somebody else to a lesser degree. I know for myself, what I can say is this: is that, you know, when it comes to the power control thing, and I heard you guys talking about doubt, I remember I went through that with a partner that tried to make me doubt my sex and my sex ability. And, you know, I actually believed him until I kind of, like, left that partner and I got with somebody else. And it was like, and I was just like, oh, wait a minute. They was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But They had me thinking that for a long damn time. A long time. Right. And I was doubting myself and thinking I needed to do this and that. So I think that the power thing is really deep, because people get you to think something about yourself. You believe it, and then they take your belief and they manipulate you according to that belief. And you, you know what I'm saying, because of your love for that person and the fact that you would say to yourself, well, they wouldn't, they would never do something like this to me and be deceitful or manipulative, you believe it.
Right.
So I think it was Lisa that was saying, I'm not sure, that it, you know, some of the cure to this whole thing is you really gotta believe in yourself and stand on what you know about yourself. Because even if you're in a relationship, it doesn't matter if the person loves you. You got to have a concept of yourself and stick to that concept of yourself, because at any given time, you could meet somebody and they could change your perception of yourself, and it's not real. It's not real. It's something that they created. We bought it. We start living by it, and they manipulate us based on what that person sold us. And then years later, you come to find out it wasn't real. And you realize, damn, I wasted all of these years thinking this, and it wasn't that. So I think that's one of the one of the keys is you got to have a good concept of yourself.
Absolutely, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm going to reiterate on the earlier part of your statement about we all have these capabilities. Of course, we do. The human animal is capable of anything, but these people that we're seeking out are intentionally setting out to cause damage. People such as myself and the other ones that have suffered at the hands of these people, we are aware that we are capable of doing this, but I doubt that I would ever try to hurt someone intentionally. If I say something, if we're having a heated discussion and I say something, it's more than likely I am trying to get a point across, not trying to cause damage. But I agree with what you were saying, though. Yeah, we're all capable of it. And we know we are.
All right. As it is for me, situations.
Wow.
Let me,
and also, that's too, with...
Let me add this.
So go ahead, man.
In the gaslighting conversation, when you are in love with someone and you've made a commitment to them, you don't know that you've been gaslighted until towards the end of the relationship. When it's actually had time to reflect. Because this was done to me for 10 years through 2 years of dating, through the 7 to 8 years of marriage, it was done. But I overlooked it because I wasn't in it for gaslighting or to hurt anyone. But the other person was adamantly and vehemently about maliciously using me and hurting me. So sometimes you don't know that you're being gaslighted. I mean, you couldn't gaslight me now, I'd laugh in your face. Because I know what it looks like.
Absolutely.
So there's the component that I just wanted to add, that sometimes you just don't know until it's the end.
Right.
Yeah, you don't know. When you have been manipulated, see, by the time they start that gaslighting thing, they have had you, they've gotten you in a position where you already are deep into them. So you can't see the purpose behind that negativity that they're spewing at you, making you feel like, you know, well, damn, you know, like we were saying earlier, questioning ourselves. And we don't really need to question ourselves, but you are so much into this person, you like, well, damn, I got to figure out a way to fix this. When it isn't shit to fix, because you can't fix them. But it's like you said, Van, until it's too late, it's at the end of your relationship. Then you realize, you know what, the fuck up. Damn, all this time, motherfuckers talking this shit to me, and it ain't me. It wasn't me at all. Their intentions was to hurt me when they couldn't get their way, or I wasn't moving fast enough, or something didn't take place exactly the way they wanted to take place, you know, or they all so-called found somebody else that's interested in them that will kiss their ass. Now all of a sudden, you're not good enough. Yeah, you're right. You are right. Lord, and struck a nerve. Yeah.
Right, because nobody comes in the door at full force. Nobody comes in the door with the whole gaslight thing going on. They come in being everything that you need them to be. And when you start believing in them, that's when they start to nitpick and turn little things into, and then you're like, what in the world did I do that made you come at me in this direction? Because everything was so great prior to this. And then you get caught up in that cycle. They love bomb you. They give you everything you need. And then they manipulate little things. And you start questioning your own mind. And that's what causes these things to work. Because they make you question your own judgment.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think if you could be better, then things will be better.
Yeah, and if I could only make him happy, if I could only make her happy at this point, then things would be great, because things were great at one point. But when things, I've gotten to a point in my life where if everything is great in the beginning, I am cautiously waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
Don't do that. That's another thing that we have to get away from. I've done that myself, and it's sabotaging. It really is. You cause the demise of something that could be great before it even gets off the ground. You have to stop doing that. It's nothing wrong with being cautious, but don't be so cautious to where you are so apprehensive that you don't open the door at all. You don't even crack the door for something that could potentially be really, really good for you. I had to learn that lesson, man. I've ruined,
I'm in that space right now because, you know, when you've been love bombed and when you've been manipulated in the things that you, and they know what you want when they come in. So when you've been manipulated in that way, when you finally have something that's decent, that's real, then you question this reality. So I'm trying to lay back and let things reveal themselves as they should be, rather than make judgment, because it's such a good thing in the beginning.
Well, the funny thing is, this came in from the back channel. Hold on for a second. You know, when someone said, you know, they were with someone, they was lost in the sauce, and they said the good intentions will get you shitting on for real, but the person going out of their way to cause intentional hurt, you know, to intentionally hurt you, to do certain things in order for those things to happen. Like, the funny thing is I remember if I did one thing, one thing I did compared to the 30 things that they did, like they did 30 things. Like, I remember one time, I'm telling them who it is. All right, so literally she was dealing with this dude who lived literally like maybe down the block and over, right? And so I was supposed to be going to Chicago for some things, and she just was acting super funny. Like, I was like, why are you acting funny? Like, you know, and it was just weird how she was acting. Like, she was acting super, like, she was mad at me for something. I was like, I didn't even do anything, right? But in the meantime, in between time, she met the dude who was down the block. Now, not to mention that the dude was married, had a baby on the way at the same time he got married, and he was dealing with two other chicks, but she didn't mind. And so when she had her surgery, she literally walked to his house to go see this man with her surgery, like after her surgery, right? So the meantime, in between time, you know, he could yo-yo her. That's what I would call it. He'd yo-yo her. He'd pull her close and then he'd send her away. Pull her close and away. Pull her close and away. And then we were having a conversation and she was complaining to me about the person that he was seeing, who I knew. And I was like, don't ever talk to me about another man. You know, like anything else, right? And so at that point, because I stood up for myself, so then she decided to do something crazy. So here I am in the house with my kids, and this dude comes by. She, like, invites him in. Like, invites him in. And I'm sitting here like, what are you doing? And she just wanted to see the massive amount of confusion and all this shit on my face to go through. But she did this several times with seven people. And I was just like, constantly like, oh, that don't faze me. I'm gonna keep going, you know. Like, literally, like, the dude came to the house to pick her up in the car, and she said she had a class, and the dude dropped her off. He literally took her to a hotel, fucked her, brought her back, and literally, and left her. She came in the house, and, you know, and the funny thing was, he went straight upstairs, and she took a shower. And I just sat there, and I was like, you know, and then she was like, oh, that's just a friend, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's just crazy. And the thing was, like, I really was like, I was questioning my simplicity at that point because, you know, like, I could be super strong.
But that's the point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I could be super strong for everything else in the entire world. You know, put a cape on my back, be Atlas. When it came to, like, her manipulating me around my kids, I sucked. Like, I was a simp. Like, I'm going to say it. I was a simp. Super simp. Because I was gaslit, love bombed, manipulated, did all kinds of different things. And she'd be like, oh, you know, such wrong. And I was like, yeah, man, this wasn't what I needed to be at this point. And I literally would, like, go through all the different stuff that would happen, like nuts. Like, really nuts, nutty stuff. Like, yeah. Oh, and to answer questions, yes. No, that was before I married her. That was all beforehand, which was crazy. But that
it
being
is crazy,
said,
but it's what they do. It's how they do. They have you believing that you, the best thing that you have in your life is them.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up getting caught in that cycle. So even if you aren't married but they're treating you that way, you will marry them anyway because you think that's the only thing there is for you. Because nobody else will love you in any way because they've created this idea that nobody else will love you in that way. My ex-husband actually said to me, I'm not going nowhere and you're not going nowhere. Nobody else wants either of us, so where are we going? And then he left me anyway.
Yep, been through all of that. Mine had me thinking I was so ugly and so unattractive that, and because I had children, no man wanted a woman with children, and he's like, it ain't what you think it is out there. They don't want no woman that already got kids, and you know,
Yeah, I've been there too because it was the other way for me because I couldn't have children. That was what he used. No man wants a woman that can't procreate, they can't give him heirs to his life. So you know, I'm not going nowhere, and you're not going nowhere. You stuck with me. So I had to put up with whatever he dished out because nobody wanted me anyway.
Here's a good one. Mine told me that he would have me institutionalized if I left, and he would have my children taken away from me if I dealt with someone else for breaking a lawful union. That he knew doctors. He knew people. He did know people, and I would... You know, when it came down to my children, like you, Javi, I was good. That's my kryptonite. And to put fear in a person like that is the worst. Anything you could have said to me, that was the worst. I'm going to have the children taken away from you. I'll have you put away. You think I can't? Mm-hmm. You know who I know. shit like that, you know? And I'd be like, oh my God, I can't even talk to anybody about this. Because if I do, who's going to say something to him? Because I didn't know who to trust. People, we had people around me that I thought I could confide in, and they were running and telling him everything. So I couldn't even, I didn't know what block to turn down, who to talk to. You know, that manipulation, controlling shit is, whew, honey, some motherfucker.
They want you to believe that the only person on earth that wants you is them, so that you have no other choice but to deal with them, whatever they dish out.
Right.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is.
But you have to understand what your own worth is. You have to look at your own self and understand who you are and what you built yourself to be. And then when you confront, because when everything hit the wall with me in the last relationship, and he had given me all that, and then after that meeting, when I realized these people understand that I have some power of my own. When he came to me then with his bull, my reaction was, no thanks, I don't want any of whatever it is you're given. You said that you're only here because you feel sorry for me. That the only reason that I'm in your life is because I can't do any better. I know now that I can do better. So you keep all that to yourself. I'm going to be fine without you.
Amen.
Unfortunately, we don't learn that until too late.
Right. You have to find a space in your head. That meeting when I was standing in front of these people and I was presenting what it was that I was presenting, and these powerful men who were running corporations stood up and applauded what I was saying. I was like, this man has made me believe that I'm nothing. Mm-hmm. And I see these powerful people who believe in what I'm saying, who stand up and applaud me. I needed that at that moment to wake me up and say, you're way more than this man can handle. He's trying to bring you down to his level. You don't need to be at that level. You're way above that.
Right.
Yeah, well, you have to understand that when people do stuff like that, like I remember I was going to get a job at Brooklyn College, and I was one of the top candidates. And she's like, oh, you're gonna move to Brooklyn and get away from your kids? You're not going to be here to raise your kids? You're not going to, you know. And when I'm thinking about all the things that she would say, anytime that I got close, like I remember I was like, it was crazy because it was like Brooklyn College. There was a job at Syracuse University. Like, and it was like crazy because it was like I kept coming up. And I remember the guy who was the director, he was like talking to me. And he was like, yo, you'd be a perfect fit. And, you know, like between that, Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, like every time that I got the idea that I wanted to do something, she would throw the thing of having the kids, or you're going to leave your kids. You're going to do this with your kids.
Right.
Same thing wrong with the D.C.
Right.
Job. You're going to leave your kid. You're going to leave your kids behind. Now, the funny thing is most of the times when people are saying this about their kids, they really don't want you to go because they know that they're going to be without, like, they're going to be without you, your kids. You're usually the counterbalance to anything else, and they're going to tell you anything else, that, like, you know, like, oh, you know, like, especially if they don't even take care of their kids. Like, they're not the main people to take care of the kids. Like, you're the person who runs everything else and doesn't care what's going on. So what my ex used to do, which was crazy, is that she would try to make me seem like I was a bad person and a bad father at all times. And she would go out of her way to talk to people and to tell them, you know, terrible things about that, you know. And then, you know, if anything else, I remember, you know, Van, you might want to help me out on this. So I remember when my kids was coming down, and right, so they were like 17, 18, right? So I was like, they could take the train. And she's like, well, they're not going to come unless you drop to the city, you get them, and you drop them off in the city, door-to-door service, blah, 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 so forth. And I was like, they need to learn how to navigate in the city.
Mm-hmm.
They need to learn how to, you know, And she was like, no, well, they're not going to come unless you do this and blah, blah, blah. And so she would always make it more difficult for me. So I had to travel, right, drive, you know, instead of picking them up on the train, right, I'd have to drive and pick them up wherever they were because that's what her requirement was, because she wanted them to feel safe and do all this other stuff. But at the same time, she would leave them in the house for days without, like, significant amounts of food.
Right. Because it was never
so
about the children's
was.
Safety. It was
and,
about her
right.
manipulation of you.
Right.
Yeah, and so the funny thing is,
I
remember it was like, go ahead, man.
Driving. Driving. So I spent anywhere from 7 to 9 hours every Friday and every Saturday driving to get my kids or drop my son off. So I definitely understand what Mojave is talking about.
Right.
However, as a father, I really don't care how far a distance I have to go to spend time with my kids. I'm going to do what what the mothers don't see is the kids see this. Because my daughter already questions, well, why do you always have to come get us and drop us off? And eventually it will catch up to time-wise and what the kids
right.
are going to grow up and say their parents, to the other parent.
They'll see it for what it is.
You know, so,
absolutely.
So I understand the struggle, Mahati.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, listen. I was like, you know how somebody, they think that they got the upper hand, and then later on, the kids be like, oh, you shit, you know. And it's funny, because I went through that with my son. I went through all the stuff with my son. I decided, when he chose me, I was like, he's so responsible for me gaining a backbone, learning to have a spine, because I just was really, going through it. Even when he graduated, she didn't even stay. She didn't even bring, any time that he's graduated, right, his brother and sister never came to the graduation, except when he graduated from high school. And so she's always funny around these different activities, all the stuff that she was doing. And so literally and figuratively, once he got out of the house, same thing with my daughter, once he got out of the house and they realized, they was like, oh, wait, no, dad is always here. If I call dad, you know, even when I argue with my daughter, we argue. But literally, when she has a moment, she calls me. And it took a long time, you know, and all the stuff that she thought she was doing, all this extra, I was like, yo, your kids is going to find you out. And they're going to find you out in short form or short order. And you're going to have to deal with their angst, the ire. You're going to have to deal with all the stuff that you did that you thought that you was doing. It's like you could have made life that much easier. You could have said, hey, let's co-parent. Let's get this done. Let's do that. Instead, somebody wants to try to control the dynamic in a relationship to have more power. You know, because they believe that power is being made. Oh, I got the power of this. I got that. No, you don't. True power is when you can share something together. You know what I'm saying? You can literally share something that's going to help everybody come together and work out. You know, and so when we go through all the different stuff that we're looking at, the craziness of all of it is that when you're going through, if you go through a process of, I'm divorced and all this other stuff, in order for me to get free, I had to act like I wanted to be with her. Because when I acted like I didn't want to be with her is when she got closer to me. That's when, you know, so I was like, oh, you know, I want to save everything, blah, blah, blah. And he convinced some dude to serve me papers at my school, which literally he would tell people who he was. And they literally could have arrested this dude, took him out in handcuffs. And they was like, what do you want to do? I was like, nah, he's just going to give me these papers for whatever she's going to do. And as soon as I got the papers, right, he's like, I got you, right? I saved all the emails, and she saw all the threats, all the stuff that he said to me at that time. And I realized at that point, it's one manipulation after another manipulation after another manipulation. And then after all that stuff that happens, you know what? Kids still went to medical school, you know, Mm-hmm. He was doing trash shit with him, you know, like, you know, like, to me, I'm like, if you know your kid's in school, why are you borrowing money from your kid? What's wrong with mm-hmm. you? He should be borrowing money from
wow.
you. You know, you should be doing this. You should be figuring out all the stuff that you need to do, like, everything else. Like, she's like, well, I want to go visit him at school and all this other stuff. And I was just like, yo, I was like, yeah, but you went to visit him at school and then you asked him for money. Like, who does that? Why? For what? All right. Mm-hmm. Let me stop exposing my colon. wait a second. I think we just had another call come in. All right. So let me go back over to this, right? Let's talk about shared power, all right, and what shared power looks like and what it is, you know, that we can get into it. So what do y'all think shared power is? If you have it,
I personally think power is kind of an ugly word, because if someone has power and someone else doesn't, then that makes a dynamic that makes for a toxic relationship. I feel like the power is in the shared responsibility of making the relationship work. You do your part, I do my part. You have
yeah.
your strengths, I have my strengths, and we build upon that. But when somebody
right.
has power over you, then that makes for toxicity.
Yeah. Especially when you look at it as them having power over you, or they emphasize in some way or another that they may have power over you. It does. It makes
right.
it ugly, and it turns it
right.
into something different. Yeah, the shared responsibility of making it work, wanting it to work, yeah,
mm-hmm.
that'll work. But
that's the key.
Yeah, when you bring that thing in there, that power thing, yeah, it's ugly.
Okay.
Yeah, listen, I'm just telling you, like, I think what they have here, they said a level of shared power. I think the power that they're diagnosing is the power that two people get by working walking together. That's just me, but
mm-hmm.
they said both partners feeling like their emotional needs are being met, the ability for both partners to speak their minds freely, decisions that are made jointly with each partner's needs in mind, a strong foundation of mutual respect, a healthy amount of personal space for each partner to grow as an individual, responsibilities that are shared equally between partners, and the ability for each partner to admit fault and take responsibility for their actions. So,
that's effort.
Yeah, it's definitely effort, but, you know, I can tell you.
You can call your, you know, if you want to put a label on it, you can say power couple, not who's
right.
more powerful, than who has the power over the other. Just say, you know, power couple. Always keep it
right.
as working together, a team. You don't want to separate the dynamic between you two, because then it's a whole different animal then. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, power
effort
struggle.
Effort and responsibility, always. Never power. I don't like that.
Right. Each of us has our strengths. We use that for our greater good.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, but I think the idea of that, which you know, you broke it down to effort. I think a healthy amount of personal space is actually good. But see, way I opened your mic because I know you're on here. That's the reason why I did it. But I think that, you know, personal space. There are certain people that they don't give people personal space. Like, they refuse to give people personal space in order for them to grow. You know, I know somebody right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their SO. Follows them all over the fucking house, like literally just follows them all over the fucking house, just to fuck with them,
right.
like literally, like. But they're legit narcissists. Like, they literally just, okay, let me walk up on you, and the funny thing is, like, they walk up on them, like, with the intention of causing confusion or fear or trying to do certain things. But, you know, it's crazy
mm-hmm.
when you can't be by yourself in your own house. Like, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That person just decides mm-hmm. to sit there and just stare at you.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that's a reason. Right, that's a reason to start looking for the exit. Because if somebody has that much need for control over everything you do, then you don't have a space to be who you are. That's a reason to start looking for a way out.
Yeah. Yeah, because their intentions is to completely make you uncomfortable all the time. Keep you on
edge
all the time.
Right.
Okay. Intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I mean,
intimidation is just to keep you, make you paranoid as well. Like, standing here still. I know they're there. You know, it's just to keep you on edge.
Right. Because their only design is to make you feel like you don't have any real mind of your own to be able to handle your own situation.
I don't think it's that. I think case by case basis, in this particular person's case, I think this person knows, he absolutely knows that she's smarter than him, that he doesn't have anything without her. Like, literally, he has nothing. Like, and he doesn't have the mindset to build or create or anything else like that. And so when you have somebody like that, you're so afraid to let them go because you're worried about what will happen, because you know somebody will take your same situation and win with it, you know. And so if you got everything in life from being with this particular person, life came, like, you came up in the fucking game from being with this person, and then you know this person is very much super beautiful, still good looking, you know, still good looking, you know, literally.
It's your own paranoia. You feel like you know that they know that they are better than you, so I gotta keep sticking myself to you on a constant basis so that you don't understand that you are fine without me.
I think what happens is that it's not even that. It's like, what would I do, you know, if you're not here?
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have you as the basis of everything that I have, if I don't have you as the foundation of everything that I need to, if I can't stand on your shoulders, if I can't do any of this stuff that happens because I'm not capable of doing certain things, you know. And some people, they'll work like, you know, like, each person is different. Like, somebody will work really, really hard, and they'll think, like, yo, I got all the money, I got all this, so therefore I get to dictate and make all these decisions, right? Based on this, because economically it's this, you know. Or you'll have somebody who's like, well, if I can't just do what I'm going to do, I'm going to put my hands on you, I'm going to do something, I'm going to make you stay where you're at, because if you leave me, then what will I really have? What will actually occur?
Right. They recognize their own diminishment without them. They recognize that, without them, I am nothing. So I have to cling to them because I don't have anything on my own.
You know,
they would never tell you that.
And so they rather you go hard and break. They rather break you and try to do all kinds of different things with you, you know. But the funny thing is, like, you know, with you know, because we're talking about the power dynamic and stuff like that, like, I know for a fact that certain people, they're not meeting people's emotional needs or anything else that's going on. That's not the stuff that's happening. They don't want to hear what people are saying or something like that because they feel like somebody's out talking them, or they feel like anything else is going on. You're trying to do this, you know. They don't feel like all the stuff is being shared out. Like my thing is like this, right? If you have a kid, you both are responsible for the kid, right? You're both responsible for the kid. There's no ifs, ands, buts, or suppose. There's nothing in there. It's the job, right? That's the job, right? Your job is to make sure that your kid grows up, you know, intact, mind intact, all this other stuff that's going on, everything else. No one gets to say, well, I'm only doing this, or I'm only doing that, or I'm only going to do A, B, C, D, F, G, right? And so, like, in certain cases, which I've noticed, like, people who are not attuned to their kids have the hardest time understanding their kids because they're not really caring about their kids, you know? They're not really doing certain things. Like, one of the things, I know Van is here. Van, you see it, right? Because I'm not looking. Van, you still here, right?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
One of the things that I think is... Yeah, I can't hear you. One of the things that I think is brilliant that Van does, Van takes his daughters out on dates. Right? Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant. Why? Because he's showing them the type of treatment that they need and they're going to do it. And basically, when they grow up, they're going to be like, listen, if you can't do what my father does, why would I bother mm-hmm. with you? It teaches them strong self-esteem. It teaches them to expect a certain type of treatment. And it's not entitled. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of saying, this is my expectation. And when you have an expectation, you know it. You know, and he gets in, he plays with them, he lets them paint that, you know, he does all the stuff, right?
Set a standard.
They're learning nurturing from him. They're learning love and care from him. They're learning that mm-hmm. there's a play aspect, an element that you can get that, and they'll expect that from a man that they deal with. They'll be like, I want that. You know, you ain't
mm-hmm.
no. But like, oh, you mm-hmm. yeah. I think you should. Nah, I ain't doing that. I'm sorry. I was raised by the best. That's what it is. And the expectation.
Yep.
Right.
The expectation raises that level. You know, and then when you have somebody who's a narcissist, all they can figure out is what they can take from you. How can I take
this? Exactly.
From you? What can I take from you? What can I do? And there's more feminine narcissists than we even hope to understand, where you'd be like, yo, what can I take from you? What can I do? How can I do this? You know, how can I do certain things that are not going to, and, you know, what can I do in this dynamic that's going to make these things change or anything else, how I want things? You know, that's why I was like, one of the funniest things I think I've seen is when they had the guy, he's talking about, yeah, what do you, he's like, you the food dude. They were talking about how women will date a dude just to eat food. Just to go out and have, I have no intentions of being with this guy, but we'll tell him whatever they need to tell him in order to get him to take them out. You know,
mm-hmm.
and the guy was like, "Yeah, you the food dude. You know, you such and such. You know, there might be a dude who's like the hair dude. You know, like, oh, you don't help me get my hair done, whatever. You know, but the idea of manipulating people into the certain things that are happening is crazy in that sense." You know, and they think that there's a power dynamic into it, you know. It's like, oh, this is, you know, I'm in control of this. This is what I'm doing. You know, a narcissist will do that in a minute. They'd be like, yeah, like they could not be germane to anything else, but they'll be like, yo, this is mine. This belongs to me, and this is mine, and I made this, and this is my house, and this is my car, and this such and such. You know, they'd be like, oh, you pay for this shit. You pay for none of this shit at all. Anyway, Peace, can you hear me? I'm so stuffed up. It's crazy.
Yes, I can.
Hey, what's happening? What's happening?
Yes. Peace, man.
Everybody say what's up to the C-Way.
Hi,
C-Way. How you doing?
Hey.
Hey, everybody. Peace, fam.
Just crept in on it. So, Peace, what do you...
Well, Mo knows that we kind of touched on, coincidentally, kind of touched on this conversation this morning during Sunrise Scribe. And everything that everyone is saying, I'm vibing with, I understand. And I guess the new dynamic that I want to explore is, how do we differentiate? It's easy to have some of these conversations in a bubble because a lot of us are talking from our personal experience, and we can talk about individual and personal flaws, personal issues that people have. But where do we begin to merge this conversation with how this all shows up as symptoms of systemic issues that we have as people of color in our relationships with each other? Because that part of the conversation has to be had. As much as we need to have a conversation about, you have to be responsible to me, we also have to have a conversation about, how do people know how to be responsible to one another when systemically our relationships have been targeted and damaged? How do we deal with that so that our other conversation can be more fruitful? Because I posit that for as long as the systemic symptoms exist and we continue to be targeted in that way as a people, our individual relationships continue to suffer.
That's true.
Ooh. That's a think piece.
Yeah, it's big, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's super big. But when we talk about systemic, like... Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It takes both parties in a relationship to want to step up to that. Because if the dynamic of being a leader and a follower gives you power, then why would you want to come into a situation where you're equally yoked? You have to pass everything between the two of you. So it takes the proper mind in a relationship to understand that I'm not the king, I'm not the queen, and I don't need to defer to or be deferred to before that situation even becomes a possibility, because you have to want to be equally yoked in order for it to work.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
You wanted to say something, Adriana?
I was going to say, I think that a problem that we suffer from in our community is that we have a tendency to think that we should stay even when a situation isn't healthy for us. There's some people that aren't in a relationship for a lifetime. They're into it. They can have regular sexual encounters. They don't really want what you're looking for. And I think that goes into what Lisa was saying about being equally yoked to a person. A lot of times, we're just settling for empowering through these trauma bonds. And
right.
I don't know that we have a healthy way of, as a community, disassociating ourselves from those type of relationships.
We make these commitments and we believe, one of us in the relationship believes the commitment and the other just does whatever they do. And so then
right.
you get caught up in your own values of saying, mm-hmm. okay, I made this commitment. I'm going to stick with it and do the end. But
right.
for real, you should step away from it long before, because your yeah. commitment to that ideal is not what is valuable to you. It's not what is working for you in that relationship. So sometimes you have to re-examine your own ideas, because I've done that
yeah.
too. I was in a relationship, and because I changed my name for this man, because I went through that marriage ceremony and I tried to do all that was needed to make it work, when he stepped away long before I ever did, and then when he finally left, I was left feeling dejected and broken, because he never believed the commitment that we made at the altar that day. So he never honored that commitment, so it didn't matter to him, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get back to what Feast was talking about, you know, how is it systemic? You know, I want to bring back the conversation we were talking about, because we were talking about the song Teach Me by what you call it, Music Soul Child, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, basically, that's like, I wonder, do we have that here? Let me see. Man, do we have Teach Me in the thing?
It should be in there.
Hold on. I'm looking for it right now. Hold on.
Even in that song, that's kind of a self-centered type of thing, because you want me to show you how to love me when you should come into this relationship as a whole person, knowing how to love and how to give love.
Mm,
But you know what? not, because some people have been so damaged or they just haven't experienced it. So I don't think that's a selfish thing. Honestly, I think it's an unselfish thing because he's letting her know, listen, I want to know how to love you so I can give you what you need. This is what I'm making from it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see that as a selfish thing as him, you know, putting a burden on her. He's letting her know, listen, I haven't experienced that. Some people haven't learned certain things in life because they haven't been open to it. It hasn't been shown to them. Just like with me, I told you all my relationships were toxic because I came from an abusive background. So that's what I was drawn to, and that's what I stuck with. And nobody was around to tell me different. Okay, so I thought that's just the way it was. And I had to learn. You know what I mean? Through it, you have to experience. If you don't have that experience, you're not exposed to it. I think it's fair to say to someone, yeah, teach me how to love. But, you know, if you care, especially if that person cares, I need you to show me how to love. Not just love you, but to love.
Because that opens up a whole deeper level of communication that can help the relationship for future growth. You know,
absolutely.
I'm willing to learn.
Okay.
As long as you want to show me
how to love you.
Right? Yeah. I mean, because hindsight, if a woman came to me with something that she thought that the way that I wanted to be loved, that would seem kind of arrogant on her because that's all she's known, and she's going to continue to do it that way. And then the moment, so what if it's 2-3 years down the road and I say, hey, babe, look, listen, you've been doing this for so long, and I want to talk about it now. She would say, well, why didn't you tell me this in the very beginning? I mean, you've been doing it this wrong all this time. Why didn't you tell me this in the beginning? So I think that I don't think that's a selfish thing. I think that's a very selfless thing.
Right. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I also think it's very important for women to be extremely careful because there's a hierarchy of there's a hierarchy in the conversation when it comes to our relationships. Unfortunately, there's a lot of claiming victimization in these conversations often. And it may not seem like that's what we're doing, but if you step back from it, it can be. And a lot of times women are saying to men, pointing, these are your inadequacies. When you come to me, I expect this, I expect that, I expect this, I expect that. And they're they are often not challenged to also then examine the ways in which they approach relationships and be really honest about their shortcomings as well, because they're so busy focused on men and they've been given the stage to do that. We have been given the stage to do that. So I think in the conversation, we have to both become very transparent and accountable for our stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. That is such a very good point that you make there, because women have been put on this plateau where any little tear will play against the man's softer side or his emotional side where he cares about, oh, damn, I can't do this to her. You know, and she takes advantage of that because it's been some damage done instead of owning up to what's going on with her. Man, I love that point you just made. I really do. That is so, man, that's paramount right there.
Right.
Right.
I wish I knew what the platform was, but that's just the reason that we're having. Well, this is one of them. These platforms, these conversations that are being had between men and women, have to bring that aspect into it, so it becomes more of a part of the discourse about these bigger issues, so that we are focusing correctly and not being one-sided. But what are the ways that, you know, what are the ways in which men learn to deal with women from a young age? What are the ways that women learn to deal with men from a young age so that early in life they start to have a better point of view about relationships? And it can't always be just from mama's point of view, daddy's point of view, what I saw in my household. You know, what else can be put in place so that they can have these conversations early?
Mm-hmm. Right. I know for myself, being a part of this council has shown me a different side, because I grew up in a toxic situation. My father was very narcissistic and my mother gave in to every whim. So coming into this war council and meeting men and seeing men like Mojave, like Van, like Dawood, who have children, who have responsibilities, who have made the effort to put in the energy to become the men that their children needed to see them be, has shown me a different side, because I don't have been like these three men in my life who put in the energy to become whole in themselves. So that they can come to the next situation when they make that decision to be a whole person. You know, so it has opened my eyes in seeing that my worth has to be well worth the thing that I'm seeking. I have to be the person that I'm seeking in order for it to be what I need for me, instead of looking for someone to complete the 50% that I am. I need to be 100%, and they need to be 100%, and we need to bring those things together and create a whole.
That's very true. All right.
Yeah. So,
I think
going back to the systemic thing. So, why are relationships between I'll specify black men and black women. Why are systemically known to be bad or treated like they're bad? Like, why? What is the culture that's being created around this idea, and why is it being pushed?
Because I think more emphasis is put on the negativity that takes place within a relationship that is completely normal. Shit that happens between black folks. It's the same arguments that white folks have too. Spanish folks have too. We have our ups and downs in relationships, but we are targeted in more of a negative light than anybody else. And I really don't know why, but that is what it is. That's what I perceive it as. Where our arguments can get just as ugly and heated as anybody else's. But for some reason, it's made to seem like it's demonized for some reason, like it's abnormal, you know, abnormally bad or you know, it's I don't know.
It's not enough positive representation of a good, what a healthy black family would look like. And that's a conversation that I had the other day. I'm like, I think a lot of us do not come from a foundation of what healthy, even healthy conflict resolution looks like. Before you even get into a relationship, we don't know what healthy conflict resolution looks like. We don't know what healthy love looks like. We don't know what healthy relationships look like. It's either you're sticking in it and it's toxic, or you're walking away and you're breaking up the family. But it's, we only see examples of those two things, but I don't think that there's enough representation for a healthy black family. We don't, I know for myself and even my husband, we don't come from, we come from single parent households where if that's where you come from, that's all you know. So how do you go into a marriage thinking that you know what you can say, that there's an ideal way that this relationship should, this partnership should be, not the way that this woman or this other person should be in order to make us whole, but what this partnership should look like if it is experienced in a healthy way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did come from a two-parent household, but whatever my father said was right, and my mother's opinion didn't matter. And that was the way that I grew up. And my mother constantly deferred to my father so that I grew up with the idea that when you found a man in your life, that you diminished yourself
right.
in order to be that what he needed you to be. And I had to grow from that ideal. But I had my grandparents who, my grandmother was as strong-willed as my father, as my grandfather, and they were equally yoked, whereas her opinion mattered as much as his did and how they raised their children. Excuse me. How they raised their children and how they lived their life was about being equally yoked with each other and having, I have my strength and he has his strength and together we become a whole. But I grew up in that household where my mother, who had been abandoned as a child, who had been orphaned, who had been passed from family member to family member, and her only way was to be less than in order to be his partner.
Right.
You know, my father died in 2004. And after that, I took my mother out. This is just a little thing. I took my mother out to dinner to an Italian restaurant, and she ordered garlic bread. And I thought to myself, I've never known you to eat garlic. You always said you hated it. So when the garlic bread came, I was like, I didn't know you liked garlic bread. And she was like, I love garlic bread, but your dad never liked smelling garlic on my breath, so I never ate it. So for 50
mm-hmm.
years, she had denied herself that little
mm-hmm.
pleasure because he wouldn't tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at that moment that I've lived 40 years of my life over 40 years of my life listening to her defer to him. And this isn't the truth of what a relationship should be, because she had to diminish who she was in order to be in that relationship. And I mm-hmm. never wanted to be that person.
All right. Mm.
Mm. Mm. Cool. Wow. You have a whole bunch of stuff to go through. So, and speaking of this power dynamic and things of that sort, where can we readily see examples of positive love in the media that reflects, you know, us and our culture?
Where?
You said in the media?
Right. That's what I said. Where? I can't recall, honestly.
Actually, you know what?
Let me take that back.
Because Barack Obama and Michelle Obama lets us know
okay.
that black love is
okay.
alive and well.
Absolutely.
And they were spotlight media when he was a president for 2 terms. So for 8 years.
Okay.
Point well made.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
A real representation of what the family dynamic could look like.
Yeah.
The one thing that I know is they were not selfish when it comes to the desires of what they wanted as a couple, because they they succeeded.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But you know what? They were also transparent with the public
yes.
as well.
Yes.
Right.
Relationship.
Right.
Michelle didn't pull no punches. She didn't give them girls no special treatment or anything
mm-hmm.
like that. When people were praising, they were praising them talking about, oh, they role models. And Michelle was like, how? They haven't done anything yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, don't, you can't give those, that kind of, you can't show them that and they haven't even accomplished anything. They're still learning themselves. So they're not role models. Okay. I can't even give you any answers on what you think that they will be doing or anything because they haven't done anything yet. And she also was transparent about Barack's insecurities or his fear of going to make a speech before he made it. How she had to talk to him and let him know, baby, just breathe. It's going to be okay. You know, how he's stressed about things. And he spoke highly of Michelle, too, and some things that she did he didn't care for. So they were very transparent. They didn't put on this air, you know, that everything was perfect all the time. They still let you know, we're human. You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was a, you know, I mean, that was a great example. That's the only thing I could find, too, the positiveness in that couple. That's all right. Okay.
Right. And it's the first time in my own history, and I don't know how far back it would have gone, but it's the first time in my life that I didn't see personal scandal in the White House.
Right.
There was no
outside
issues. There were no, they were a solid couple regardless to what else was going on. And their kids, even though they were growing up in the public eye, didn't create scandal.
Nope.
Exactly. Exactly. They tried to throw the dirt on their names, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
The stronghold of their family is
absolutely
not. It's definitely a great example.
Anyway, it is around approximately 10:55, and we're about 5 minutes off because I'm about to go drink a bunch of tea, do all kinds of stuff, try to get this stuff out of my chest. But Vin Meadows, could you tell us what's going on in the Epiphany Radio Universe, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, join us tomorrow night with the Erotic Love Zone with your hosts, Miss VIP and La Perla Negra. Thursday night's going to be the Get Down with J-Rob, the Wise Son, and yours truly, Poetic. Friday night, y'all, is going to be Iron Sharpens Irons with Anonymity and his guest host, La Perla Negra. Saturday night, y'all, is going to be Poetic Therapy with Stan the Man Phillips and La Perla Negra. Sunday night is going to be the Inspiration Factory with your host, Divine Inspiration, and yours truly, Poetic. Monday night, y'all, is King and Queen Quarters, y'all, with Queen Simmons and King Atterbury. Make sure you tune in, and we'll be right back here next Tuesday for another one of Mojave's fine shows. Mojave, which show we have?
Thank you. We're interviewing Jessica Holter from the Punani Poets.
Nice. All right. There you have it. Mojave, back to you.
Thank you for your medals. Listen, so this is just part one. We're a little bit down. I'm a little bit under the weather. I didn't want to cancel the show because I knew it was going to be good conversation and make sure everything else is going on. It kind of sucks. I hate being sick. Sucks. But at the same time, I appreciate the good conversation that we had. And part two is going to be even better because we have more stuff involved. I did want to pull some of the stuff from the chat to bring up a conversation, but we'll do that in part two. And I want to thank everybody who came out and came in and rocked out with us. I want to thank all the back channels, people who are listening without listening, without, you know, sending messages and everything else like that as we deal with the power dynamics and relationships and things of that sort, because it's important. You know, it is a systemic issue amongst ourselves. We can repair the relationship amongst ourselves. If we be for us, who can stand against us? I don't even know if it goes that way, but that's what I think. But more importantly, it's a good conversation. We understand what's going on. And I think that a lot of things that we might have been through, I think the majority of the people who are in the War Council are empaths. And so sometimes we attract negative people, you know, who love bomb, who act, or chameleons. You know, my favorite thing is chameleons. That's when people say that one thing and they end up being something completely different in the end. But not to commiserate or trauma bound, you know, we definitely want to get more into what we're doing as the time goes along. So when we get to part two, it should be good. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming out. God bless you. Be safe. Wash your hands. And everything should be good. All right?
All right.
Love you guys.
Love you.
And this was a self-destruct. 10, 9.
8, 7, 6, 3, 2, 1.
Love one mic.
On Love One Mic.